Good morning, everybody. This is Ray Cibula here from Cornell University's Employment and Disability Institute, and welcome to webinar 2 in our Economic Empowerment series. Today we have Michelle Brooks Rowling with us, and she is the Financial Literacy 101 instructor for Startup New York, which is a federally funded program servicing entrepreneurs with diverse disabilities in Onondaga County. I hope I pronounced that right. She is the author of How to Save Money and Organize Finances, as well as a contributing writer for the Syracuse Post Standards MoneyWise supplement. Michelle is frequently invited to appear on the radio and on TV. Too bad we can't see her today, but she's a TV star addressing the topic of financial literacy education. And she's also the senior operations manager for the MIG grant at the Burton Blatt Institute of Syracuse University. Now, before we start today's substance, what I want to do is chat with you a little bit about that webinar console that's appearing on the right-hand corner of your screen. If you have been connected today by your computer's mic and speakers, and you do have any issues with your sound quality during today's webinar, you can click on the audio box, that plus sign right in front of the word audio, and it will open up that box and give you today's telephone number, the call-in log information, and the PIN. Just click the telephone button and all of that will appear and you'll be able to connect by telephone. During today's session, we're going to hold all of your questions until the end, and how you can participate and ask us questions is by clicking on the plus sign in front of the word questions. That's going to open up the question box. You'll have some room to type in your question, hit send, and it will appear on our desktops. And again, we'll take questions at the end of today's session. That being said, I want to welcome you all again to our second series and turn things over to Michelle. Whoops. What did I do? Let me go back. There it is. Okay, Michelle, take it away.
Good morning, everyone. The overall goal of this morning is to learn how to become financially organized, create a personalized budget, and teaching your clients how to do the same. And we're going to split this morning's session in two parts. The first part, once again, is learning how to become financially organized on a fundamental level. And at some point in this morning's session, we'll also address how you can solicit the aid of local organizations that deliver financial literacy education services so that you won't feel the burden of that yourself. I'd like to begin with my own first polling question. Why is it important for your clients to become financially organized? And the answer is because clients' documentation and organization is absolutely pivotal. Advance to slide 8, please, Ray.
Mm-hmm.
One of the common challenges, not only for people with disabilities, but consumers in general, is not knowing what questions to ask in order to solicit the right answer to address their needs. So how many of us have been in situations where we had to figure out what exactly we needed to ask to get, in order to get the answer to the question to help, you know, solve our financial problem? Another common challenge is that clients generally have not been taught the organizational skills to adequately maintain records in order to protect their interests. And, you know, that's another area lacking in our society in terms of, you know, lack of financial education. Another issue is the issue of time. Slide 7, please. There is a direct correlation between being organized and the retention of money, and being disorganized and losing money. And a lot of times I hear people say, but I don't have the time to become financially organized. And I would conversely argue we can't afford not to make the time to become organized in general and financially organized in particular, because again, there's that correlation between organized and retaining money and being disorganized and losing money. Slide 9, please. These are some of the topics we will start off addressing. But before I address the items that you see there, what are some of the financial organization aids that people with disabilities can use to start off becoming financially organized? I would say a self-addressed stamped envelope is important. File folders, and we'll go into more depth later on how to set up file folders. In fact, I'll say now that one of your handouts is titled How to Set Up File Folder Labels to Make It Easy. And it's important to collect receipts and make sure those receipts are date stamped. And finally, a pocket folder. Pocket folders can cost less than 50 cents. And I would recommend on the left-hand side of such a pocket folder that clients retain their documents and payments received from agencies such as the Social Security Administration. And on the right hand of that pocket folder, retain documents that they gave to agencies such as the SSA. Now, let's take a little moment to address paper and dare I say electronic management, because we can't always assume that everybody is totally offline. And we do live in an electronic age. So in terms of managing online, you know, junk email and solicitations of a financial nature, the best way to handle that is to simply click unsubscribe, especially when an email address has automatically been added to a listserv that you do not wish to receive. And the other suggestion is to limit who receives a person's email address to begin with. So for instance, you're at a department store and you're at the checkout counter and the cashier is trying to encourage a person to, you know, sign up for a credit card, and they want the email address so they can send, you know, solicitations. That's the point to really assess whether or not you truly want that information cluttering your inbox, and just be very judicious about who receives that. Now, let's just go back to the paper side of it. The big question here is, how can you prevent being overcome by the paper tiger? Your clients get bombarded, you get bombarded, those of us here on the running the webinar series, we get bombarded. How are we going to handle unwanted junk mail received physically? Well, I do have two rules of thumb for everyone to make a note of. The first rule of thumb is that there's no one right way to be organized. It's whatever works best for you. And we will cover a variety of different strategies on this call. The second rule of thumb is to take a large task and break it down and complete it over time. And that will help take away the fear. That will take away the feeling of being overwhelmed by the task. It will cut into the procrastination. And whenever we make progress on a particular task, we feel good about moving toward the completion of the overall goal. We'll also cover bill paying options and financial organizing methods, such as, you know, creating a filing system. Slide 10, please. These are tools that we can use to become financially organized: a shredder, recyclable bins, creating that filing system, and making signs, which you will visually see. Slide 11, please. So let's walk through this. Let's say that, you know, we all are going to go home at the end of today. We're going to open our mailbox, and there's going to be a lot of mail there. And so same case with your clients. The blue bins that you see there that's labeled sensitive and non-sensitive papers, it's important to start organizing that mail off the bat. Sensitive papers are papers such as credit card solicitations. Because if those blank forms get in the hands of the wrong person, a consumer or client could fall prey to an identity thief. Anything with social security number, date of birth, mother's maiden name are all categorized as sensitive. And then you have the non-sensitive papers, which do not have the sensitive information and generally can be recycled. Now, there at the bottom, you see three bins. I actually further organized the two bins to the three. The three that you see there at the bottom cost less than $5 at the store. The green is where I immediately put the non-sensitive paper, so it'll go out on recyclable day. The hot pink is where I would put my sensitive papers, and those sensitive papers do not go out until they see, and you'll see in the upper right-hand corner, a shredder. That information is shredded before it gets recycled. And I know the photo shows a regular shredder, but I do recommend a cross cut, and the prices of shredders have gone down over the years. And then finally, you see the orange there. That's my holding place for mail, which, you know, I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I really don't have time late at night to review it, so I'll store it there until the weekend comes when I have more time to look at it. And 9 times out of 10, it's going to end up in the green bin because it's junk mail. Talk a little bit about solicitation lists. Sometimes the junk mail that we receive, our names have been either bought or rented by another company, and that's how we ended up getting the catalog. So you also have a handout on how to remove your name from telemarketing lists, and that handout has several phone numbers and several web addresses that you can go to. But the most notable is the opt-out number from the FTC. And you can also visit them online at optoutprescreen.com. Another note here about signs, if we can go to slide 15, please. At the end of a long day, it's very important to become self-organized on a continual basis. And one strategy that we can utilize is creating signs. So go back to slide 14, please, on the visual. This is an example of how having simple signs can help the client become financially organized. Excuse the where you see business there, that's for the entrepreneurs with disabilities who I teach, so that's for their purpose, but let's just kind of stick with the blue signs. There's personal cash, personal debit, and personal credit. So at the end of the long day, you know, we open our wallet, empty our receipts, and we're self-organizing according to how we paid for our goods and services that day. And you'll also see folders where it says taxes. This is pivotal for everyone to be able to have a simple folder labeled appropriately so we can collect the receipts in that file folder in preparation for tax season. Let's go to slide 12, please, and look at some of the aids. There's filing cabinet, a file caddy. A filing cabinet can be, you know, 2-drawer, 4-drawer. It can be standalone, can have wheels. There's a picture also of the file caddy. If we could go to slide 13, please. These are other aids, file folders with alpha tabs. Had a student the other night who not only had the alpha tabs, but she had tabs that displayed the 12 months of the year so that she could keep up with all her bills. And she also had tabs that she made reflecting the projects in her life. On the left-hand side there, you'll see the bucket file folders. And the picture doesn't really show this, but the bucket simply means that the sides and the bottom is enclosed so that receipts won't fall out. And file folders come in letter size as well as legal size. And if we could go to slide 16, please, and take a closer look at some of the file system aids. But before I do so, I'd just like to make a quick comment about clients' ability to purchase some of these items. I've taught Financial Literacy 101 for Startup New York entrepreneurs for about 2.5 years now. And last night's session was actually a case where the students had to do their homework and create their filing system. And again, they are people with disabilities, low income. And I can consciously say that I really haven't had a case where anyone's come to me and said, I can't afford this. I can't do this because I don't have the resources. If anything, they have found ways to purchase these items. And they are, because they've made it a priority, and they are so proud of themselves when they come to class and show the class their filing system. So some of these items may be purchased at a local dollar store, Kmart, Walmart, Target, or an office supply store. I have a demo package in my office where there are 12, granted, they're pink, the color is pink, but I purchased 12 hanging file folders with the 12 inserts from Ollie's discount store, and it cost $3.99. So having said that, let's take a look at some of the supplies to create the filing system. I recommend Avery, and the exact number on the Avery is 5160 or 8160. I don't recommend its generic equivalent, because the alignment might be a little off, so the Avery. Also, a box of 1/3 cut file folders. You can either get them in colored or manila. Manila will probably cost less. And a box of hanging file folders, colored or forest green. The forest green will probably cost less. And once again, the file tote, the caddy, a 2- or 4-drawer file cabinet. They also range in size from small to large, vertical and lateral, and some have wheels. Whatever suits your fancy. Remember our rule of organizing. It's whatever works best for you and your client. Once again, I'd like to refer to the fact that you do have a handout titled How to Set Up File Folders. And if we could look at slide 17, here's a quick example where if you have papers spread out on your desk, I truly believe that most people's papers begin to name themselves. Papers just automatically get grouped into certain piles. So there may be a number of papers where it's very clear that they're auto-related, or utilities, or credit card, or insurance, and especially with the population that we work with, health and medical related. And slide 18, please. Take those. Take those labels and make sure they're affixed both vertically and horizontally, so that regardless of how the folder is placed on a flat surface, we can see what the contents of that file folder are. And then on to slide 19, then you would take an example such as auto and break it down further, title, insurance, license and registration, maintenance and repairs, inspection, car payments, and put all the appropriate and accompanying documents in that file folder. Ray, would you like to do a couple polling questions at this time before I go on to the next topic?
Sure. Why don't we do that, Ms. Shea? Let me get that first one up for you. And you're all familiar with the polling process. I'm just going to pose a question to you and give you some answers and see what you think about this stuff. The first one is, I closed it, didn't I? I'm not doing a good job today. Okay, consumers cannot become financially organized because they can't afford the necessary materials to begin the process. True or false? Just please make your selection and hit send, and we can make sure that's... I'm not seeing anybody voting.
Shows that you closed the poll.
It shows that I closed the poll.
So,
all right.
So, why don't you want me to go? Shall we go back to it and see what happens? Yeah, it's closed for sure.
It's closed for sure.
So you need to open it again.
I need to open it again. All right. I'm sorry, guys. Let me see if I can do that. Hide.
You might want to ask Jeff how we do this.
Hey guys, I'm just re-entering it as a new polling question, so it should pop up in just a second. You can
manage
it. All right,
okay. I apologize, guys. That's my fault. I hit the wrong button.
Great. 10 lashes for you and 1
lashes for me.
Okay, it's the one on the bottom if you see it. Go ahead and read it.
All right, okay. Once again, guys, consumers cannot become financially organized because they can't afford the materials necessary to begin the process. The poll is now open, and the votes are coming in. You were all trigger happy there, just waiting for me to get that out to you.
And we have one lone voter, I think.
Oh, we got two low voters.
Who are trying to screw it up for us, Michelle.
78% of you have voted already. Let's get a few more before we close this out. All right, we're getting there. Yeah, you didn't know we could tell if you didn't vote, did you? All right, let's close that out, and I'm going to share the results with you. Now, 10% said true, 90% said false. So what do you think about that, Michelle?
I agree with those who indicated false, and I think the program that I currently teach with the Startup New York clients corroborates that. It's not too much of a hardship. Don't believe to go to a dollar store and other discount outlets in order to purchase mm-hmm. some of these supplies. And, of course, you know, there are those who opt for the more high-end resources from the retail outlets. But I think more important is the financial literacy education once you provide clients with the tools and the knowledge mm-hmm. in terms of what they need to do, that they can get really excited about taking management and control over their financial organization.
Yeah, Michelle, I got to agree with you, you know, because I remember when we were preparing this webinar, I had my own doubts about that, as to whether or not, you know, having worked with poor people for my entire career, I had doubts about whether or not people would actually do it. And I happened to find myself in Target, of all places. And I actually looked, and you can get a two-draw filing cabinet at Target for $19. You know, so I and I'm not minimizing $19, because if someone's living on $674 a month, that could be a lot of money. But I think the overall goal of financial literacy will, in the end, if people have to buy these supplies over a few months, make their lives much better. So it's a short outlay for a really good result.
Right, Ray. In effect, I would take it one step further, and I would posit and say that the key here is having people change their behavior. And by having to save up and setting that as a priority to save up to get the equipment, it sort of gets them to buy into the overall issue of financial literacy and getting their finances in order.
Absolutely. And as Michelle said at the said at the very end of her statement, giving our clients control of their lives. And that's the end all here. So with that being said, let me open up the second poll. And we'll get another one done if I can do this right.
Let me do it for you.
All right, good, because I can't see it, as we know that's the issue.
Okay, I've got it up, and it says, regarding financial literacy, WIN members, and that's our network members, must assume responsibility for A, teaching consumers how to become financially literate, or B, referring consumers to agencies that specialize in it, in financial literacy. 3, C, make consumers aware of their options, or both B and C. And of course, being the kind of guy I am, seeing something like both B and C always makes me think, what's going on here?
Well, we've got 34% coming in, fast and furious.
Yeah, they're doing well. We're up to 70% almost. Good, good, good. And this is one example, Ray, where people are all over the map.
The map.
Yeah. That's very interesting.
All right.
So, Ray, let me close it for you, and I'll share the results. Here we are. We've got 10% saying teaching consumers how to become financially literate. No one says that it's referring consumers to agencies that specialize in financial literacy, although I think that's important. 13% making consumers aware of their options, and the whopping 77% said, what are you talking about? We didn't say referring consumers to agencies, because it is that one and the following one, make consumers aware of their options. And yes. Michelle, which one is it and why?
The answer is D, both B and C. The referring consumers to agencies that specialize in financial literacy education, 0%, that actually surprises me a little bit. Let's start at the top, teaching consumers how to become financially literate. That's fine, but I'm also sensitive to the fact that benefits administrators in particular are working with a variety of issues in terms of, you know, dealing with their clients. So therefore, B, referring consumers to agencies that specialize in financial literacy is pivotal. But sometimes, perhaps, you know, we're unaware of which agencies in our community offer such services. So I'd like to, you know, throw out a few resources there. There's United Way, and our colleague Elizabeth Jennings, who's on the line, is a key liaison there. A lot of the United Ways are engaged in financial literacy education. There's also credit unions. I happen to be here in Syracuse, but one of our local credit unions, Cooperative Federal, is huge in terms of providing financial education to the community. And there are other nonprofit organizations that offer this service, but it takes a little research and connections to find out who they are. Apart from that, there's a resource I'd like to throw out to everyone. It's FDIC Money Smart Curriculum. Now, mind you, there's tons of financial literacy education curriculum out there if you go on the internet. However, FDIC Money Smart is a copyright-free curriculum where you just, you know, order it. They'll send you the CD. The CD has, I think it's between 10 and 12 modules. It has the instructor's guide, the participant's guide. It has the handouts. And I'll just go further to say that some of the handouts you'll see in the budgeting segment actually come from the FDIC curriculum that I've been using. And Here's the nice thing about this. You don't have to reinvent the curriculum wheel, and you don't have to necessarily feel the burden of becoming the financial literacy expert. I do think it's important for this audience to have, you know, some idea and certainly a grasp on our own personal finances. But again, I just want you to know that there are resources out there. And then finally, C, making consumers aware of their options. The reason C is part of the answer is because none of us can really tell consumers what to do with their money per se, but we can show them options and strategies.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. I think that's right on point. You know, and I have to, you know, I'm going to give credit to the 77% for clicking on that making referrals because they did. They said both B and C. And I think our WIN members, you know, who are helping people with their benefits management or benefits assistance and planning, you know, might not be in a position to teach folks how to become financially literate. And that's not bad. That's not wrong. You know, because some of us just don't know how to teach this stuff. But I think it's a critically important part. That's why we're doing the webinars. And as you remember from your core training, we constantly said, when you don't have what your client needs, always look to fill that cup up. And whether it be applying for Medicaid coverage or whether it be referring your consumer to an agency that can provide the training that they need, that's what needs to be done. So both C and D are critical parts. For those 10% of you who may very well know how to teach your clients to be financially literate, good for you. I commend you for your talents and use it wisely.
And Ray, I do have one question that came up though we're holding questions to the end. This one is important because it's just a clarification issue.
Okay.
Melanie McGraw wants to know whether Michelle said FDIC or some other acronym because she missed it.
No problem. Kindly accept my apologies for lack of clarity there. Is F is in Frank, D is in David, I, C is in Charlie, standing for the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. So is FDIC Money Smart Curriculum, and if you do a Google search on that, you should be able to locate that free curriculum. They'll mail the CD-ROM right out to you, and might I add that it's also available in Spanish and other languages, and they also have a young adult version, a version specifically geared toward young people.
Okay. All right, Michelle, take it away again.
Okay, well, we're at slide 20. We're going to take the next half hour or so to discuss bill-paying options in the 21st century. And in the 21st century is really key there. I add that because just a decade ago, we did not have all of the options in terms of paying our bills as we do now. And I personally think this is an area that's overlooked, but it's also an area where consumers get tripped up in terms of their personal finances. Now, before we look at the various pros and cons of each method or each option that we have to pay our bills nowadays, here's the litmus test. The litmus test is whether or not bills are paid on time, in full. In the case of credit cards, in full meaning at least the minimum balance or the minimum payment due. There are no bounce checks, no fees, no late fees, no over-the-limit fees, and that how we're paying our bills is not adversely affecting our credit. So if a person is not in jeopardy of those things, then as the saying goes, if it's not broke, don't fix it. However, if any of those things are occurring, then maybe it's also time to look at exactly how we're paying the bills. And we'll go back to our rule of organizing. There's no one right way. It depends on the person and their lifestyle. And you know, I've seen various methods used for various people's situations. So let's start with pay by phone. The obvious advantage of pay by phone is that it's, you know, pretty immediate. There might be a little lapse between the time you pick up the phone and call it in and when it's posted, but, you know, make sure that the bill is paid on time. I'll use American Express as an example, although I'm conscious that that's probably more for middle class consumers, but American Express does not charge a fee to pay by phone. There are places that do charge a pay by phone fee, so that might be a downside. In the case of a money order, you take the money out the bank, you go to a post office or some other venue and purchase the amount that you want to send off and pay the bill. The upside is that you have peace of mind that it's off, it's paid for. A potential detriment could be the ever-rising cost of money orders. You know, they range from what the post office may charge to Western Union to, you know, credit union. So there's the fee every time you purchase a money order. Paying our bills by debit card, as long as you know the money's in the account, you can obviously pay it by debit card. I think a drawback could be, you know, being careful about making online transactions with a debit card. As a matter of fact, I read an article just about a year and a half, 2 years ago that kind of changed the way I use my own debit card. Whenever I use it, say at the supermarket or gas station, even though it's a debit card, it's important to enter it as a credit. So enter it as a credit and go ahead and sign the receipt versus punching in the PIN number, because the credit aspect of it is a little bit more secure. I hate to say this, but there are cyber criminals and cyber thieves who, as we are speaking, are just trying to find ways to breach the merchants' accounts of, you know, entities we conduct financial business with, and just a little bit more secure to use it as the credit as opposed to debit. Very quickly, I once had a situation where the class was concerned about additional fees, and if there are additional fees associated with that, I encourage consumers to go directly to their bank and find out, you know, are there being assessed additional fees for using their credit card? So check into that so that there are no surprises. On to online. My primary comment about online is that when conducting online financial transactions, look for, and I'll say this quickly and then I'll say it slowly, https://. That's HTTP as in Paul, S as in Sam, colon, and the two slashes. The S stands for secure. Make sure you are on a secure line before conducting financial transactions. Once again, the caveat, I always get that hand raised. So am I 100% in the, you know, safe, Teacher Mache? And I wish I could say that, but I can't. Again, because of the world that we live in with cyber thieves always looking for ways to breach security, but at least look for that. Moving on to pay in person, you know, you go to a window or an intermediary, as we would call it, to pay the bill in person, done deal. However, I would still caution to make sure that the point that you pay the bill and the point that is posted are congruent, so that, let's say you or your client is paying an electricity bill, a utility bill, ask for the receipt at the window showing the date and the time that it was paid for, and then when the statement comes in the mail, just make sure that the intermediary has paid the utility company on time on your behalf. There's also check by mail. Check by mail, the upside, it gives you a measure of control, again, provided the funds are there, are adequately covering it, and that there's no flotation of the check involved. Flotation is when the funds aren't in the bank and you write the check and send it off knowing or thinking that the money will be there by the time the recipient receives it, and you know there could be a risk of bouncing the check. But you know, once the the funds are there, you mail it off, it's paid, it's drafted from the account. The caveat there is making sure the bill is paid on time, especially if a holiday is involved. This past Monday was a federal holiday, so anyone paying check by mail had to make sure that their bills were sent out last week at least. And the other challenge there is the ever-rising cost of postage. And we are moving toward an environmentally sustainable environment where we're trying to, you know, phase out paper and go green. And so that's another consideration. Credit card, paying bills by credit card might sound a little odd, but some people do. The big caution there is the interest, making sure that you're not being charged interest on something that you're paying off, especially if you don't pay the balance in full. And then there's, before I go on the auto payment, I actually want to stick in something that one of my students raised in class 2 weeks ago, cashier's check. The advantage with cashier's check, it's secured by the bank, the credit union, the financial institution. So that's also an option. Auto payment. There's two ways that this can be done. There's automatic authorization and there's manual. Automatic authorization is when you go to the entity and you say, you know, here's my bank account number. You have my permission to go in and auto draft the account at this set interval to pay the bill. The upside of that is that, especially for you know, super busy people, you have the peace of mind that the bill is paid, provided the funds are there, of course. The caution is that even though you know that it's being auto-drafted, it's still very important to keep your eye on the statement. I do know of cases where, you know, a bill creeps up $2, $3, $4, and there's really no notification of the increase. And especially when you're dealing with people of limited resources and low income, I mean, that $3, $4 could trigger insufficient funds. And we all know that insufficient funds come with other vices. You know, the bounce check, the fee on top of the bounce check. And if it's 30 days past due, there's a negative mark on the credit report. And that mark stays on the credit report for a minimum 7 years. So that's a caution there, even if the bill's being paid in full on time. And then manual automatic, I think, provides just a little bit more control. It's where the person, you know, the entity has the financial the banking route number on file, but the consumer is going in and saying, okay, go ahead and release the funds. So there's no reinvention of the wheel in terms of providing all the information, but you go in and do that. But that also takes a disciplined individual, and we'll look as we approach our budgeting segment on how we can, you know, utilize both electronic and calendars to make sure our bills are paid on time. So I'd like to reiterate that the litmus test on all of these bill-paying options in the 21st century that we have are that the bills are paid on time, in full, there are no bounce checks, fees associated with that, late fees, over-the-limit fees, and that a consumer is not adversely affecting their credit. So if any of the above are happening, then we need to look at how the client is paying their bills. Okay, so let's go on to slide 21, financial organizing methods. You'll see a mix here. Let's start with the bank passbook, the transaction register. That's something that we all get when we open up a savings or checking account, where we record the date, the payee, whether it's a credit or a debit, and we have our calculator next to us where we calculate the balance in the far right column. There are some who utilize Excel spreadsheet, and Excel is, you know, preloaded on Microsoft programs, and the secret or the key to Excel is just knowing a couple of basic formulas to add and subtract. This is recommended. This is actually just another option. You can use the transaction register, and then some, place their budget on the Excel spreadsheet, and that helps them keep track. Now, under the line item there of financial software, I will say up front that I do realize this is more advanced, and it's more high-end, perhaps more for middle-class end users. But as with the aids that we purchase for our filing system, I wanted to include it because I do have students of limited means who do go out and purchase something like Quicken software. And I will give, pricing for this as well. It's just that I don't want to overlook that population. So Quicken. This is what I usually say about Quicken, because I think it's a wonderful tool, but I want to take the intimidation factor out of it and the fear factor out of it. So if you know how to, you and your client know how to use the bank passbook, the transaction register, with all of the features that I just mentioned, Quicken does the exact same thing. You're entering the exact same information in Quicken. It's just that the data entry takes it to a whole new level. So you are entering the date, the payee, debit, credit, the balance. Quicken is automatically calculating your balance. No calculator necessary. The power of Quicken is in its categories. Earlier in this call, I walked you through the auto example, where you have auto, insurance, fuel, license, registration, repairs, maintenance, etc. When a person purchases Quicken, I highly recommend that they take time. Now we're going back even further in our lesson today, taking the time to sit down and set up the financial categories that reflect their lives. So input auto and all the categories associated with auto. Input health and medical, and all the associated categories with health and medical, so that when those transactions are entered, you're entering date, payee, debit, credit, Quicken will automatically calculate the balance, and you're clicking literally medical doctor copay. And I'll just end this by saying that there are other features in Quicken that will allow you to go back and see how much you're spending. It'll create bars. It'll create graphs. It'll give you a monthly summary, quarterly summary, annual summary. It'll even calculate every single thing you've input so that you can get a handle on your spending. The downside is the time that it takes to input the data entry. Depending on how many financial transactions you conduct on a daily basis or weekly basis, it does take time to enter it, but we should be entering that anyway, even if we had a bank passbook or a transaction register. In terms of cost, if you go to a supply store, generally I believe it's around $89. I purchased mine 3 years ago for $89. but I went online yesterday to take a peek at the online prices. And its maker, by the way, is Intuit out in California. And the basic Quicken software, which I think would be sufficient for this audience, is somewhere between $60-$69. Mint and Wasabi.com are free online financial software that you can also utilize to keep track of expenses. And then finally, and this is the part where I hope tomatoes aren't thrown at me, but Neat Receipts, again, I admittedly say that that is high-end, but Neat Receipts is a scanner. Remember earlier we looked at the papers with the, you know, personal cash, debit, credit, and keeping the receipts organized? Well, Neat Receipts, I would say, would be the electronic version of that, where it's a little scanner that you connect to your computer, and you put in the receipts, and you can begin categorizing all of your expenses. I'm happy to say mine was a gift, but after research, brand new, it cost around $200, and it can go south to $160 if you purchase it online from places like Amazon. So again, the only purpose of mentioning these various tools is to make sure we have a nice mix of the online, the offline, the low end, and the high end, because we can't necessarily always make assumptions about what our clients are motivated to get or are able to purchase.
Ms. So, Shea, this is Ray. I just have a question for you.
Yes.
You know, when I'm looking at financial software, and the, you know, I guess I'm old because I have a transaction register and I write in everything as I'm doing it. But
sure.
I know that my bank provides me with an option to do all of my banking as well as keeping my transaction register online at no cost.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what you think about using your own bank's website for that purpose.
Excellent question. What I failed to mention is that a software such as Quicken can be linked to your bank account. You know, you can link it, and to kind of mitigate the challenge of constantly inputting the data, there are features there that allow you to download the, say you had a lot of debit transactions or clear checks, it'll allow you to actually download inside of Quicken what the transactions were. Again, the only thing is that you have to watch your categories, make sure that you're clicking, you know, auto-insurance, because, you know, the bank won't necessarily know that. But apart from Quicken, if you take financial software out of the equation, I'm all for any kind of free products or services offered by the financial institution in terms of managing one's finances. And I do thank you for bringing that up, because that's something I didn't have here on the sheet. Once again, just look for the HTTPS for secure line, because, you know, this is your private financial information we're talking about here.
Yep. That's why I use my transaction register. I just wanted to know what you thought. Thanks.
Certainly. Certainly. Okay, this concludes this portion on financial organization before we go on to budgeting. And myself regroup here. And Ray, is it okay if I take another quick question on that first part? We have 5 minutes till 11, so yeah. I'll take one question from part one before going on to budgeting.
All right, and we have someone who's been waiting patiently for this question. In order to properly advise consumers about benefits in the world of work, I'd say it's critical to gain a complete financial picture of their situation. Is there some sort of form or list of suggested information providing the basics of required information that could be adapted or used for our benefits planners?
Well, that's an excellent question. I think a big challenge in the world of financial literacy education, so to speak, is that there are so many different ways to approach our finances, and there are some that are specifically meant for low-income populations, and then there are some that are specifically for middle class or affluent people. And I think that the key components that we all need to know get lost in the mix. I do have a list of the components that anyone should be looking at in terms of their financial goals and aspirations, but I don't have it in front of me. I'm wondering, Ray, is there a way where I can connect with that person offline after this call? And I literally have it in list form that if you are, trying to get a comprehensive handle on your finances, boom, 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 down the line. But I just don't have that in front of me. But it is a superb question.
Yeah, Michelle, I think that it's probably going to be of interest to everybody. So if we could if you could email that to me, I can forward it to Teresa, who can forward it to everybody who's participating today.
That's not a problem.
Thank you
for that question.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to creating a personalized budget and helping your clients do the same. You actually have four handouts associated with this, and I'll say this quickly once. You have a daily spending diary. You have a personalized budget sheet, and you have two articles on budgeting written by yours truly. The reason I emphasize the word personalized is because I am not a big believer in generic budgets. I think that budget should reflect what's truly going on in the consumer's life. I've had students, confidentially confide that they've had, alimony or child support payments or liens where they were, paying off or a collection suit or what have you. And my recommendation is to go ahead and put that in a budget, put that in the budget so we can actually see it and make sure it's getting paid. So I'm a big believer in personalizing the budget and not just generically pulling any old thing off the internet, and so there's so many categories in our financial lives that need to be paid. A few comments before we go on to the daily spending diary, and these comments are more or less structured toward the world of disabilities. It doesn't matter how much the client is earning or what anyone says to them, they have to report their earnings. So that's one bullet. As income increases, so too, unfortunately, does expenses. And what I mean by that is sometimes there's the temptation to spend more as more revenue or income is coming in. And the ideal for all of us to engage in, and I'm going to use a middle class example here, so forgive me for that, but let's say you have a salary increase. The ideal way of handling that is to maintain the same standard of living regardless of the increase, so that increase can be used toward other uses and not go hog wild, so to speak, because a raise has come in because more money is influx is coming to the household. I think I've mentioned this before, but we can't tell people what to do with their money or say, this is the way I do it, at least without proposing options and strategies. I think an excellent example of that is the earned income tax credit, and I don't want to steal my colleague Elizabeth's Thunder for the last session, but Earned Income Tax Credit, or EITC as it is known, is a refundable tax credit on earned income. And once many people, consumers, low-income consumers find out about it, you know, they could very well have a big chunk of cash coming in. And even there, we can't say do this or do that with it, but kind of propose options and strategies on how, you know, to steer them in that direction. And then the last bullet I have here, SSI rule of thumb, one cannot save cash assets in excess of $2,000, or she or he will lose SSI benefits for that month because it's termed as excess resources. And that was something my colleague Ed wanted to make sure that I mention here in this section as well. So, what is a budget exactly? Well, the objective of a personalized budget is, in slide 23, please, Ray, to identify how much money is coming in, how much money is going out, to what entities, by what methods, and when, and to collect data in determining a monthly budget. Let's start more fundamentally with slide 24 under daily spending diary. And I apologize in advance. I believe your slides have Sunday and two Tuesdays. The first Tuesday should be Monday, obviously. But this is a place that I recommend many people just start at ground zero if they have no clue how much is coming in and how much is going out and what their financial picture looks like, to simply sit down with a sheet such as this and just write down what they're spending their money on. And 9 times out of 10, you know, we'd be surprised at how much we spend on consumption. And coming face to face with it helps us to make wise decisions going forward. And as you can see, this is an example of a handout from the FDIC Money Smart curriculum, by the way. On to slide 25, the monthly payment calendar. This is a case where we can put down our bill, you and your client can put down the due dates for their bill and see it visually in the form of a calendar. For those online users, you know, if you have Yahoo or AOL or Gmail or MSN, you know, most of those you know, applications also have a calendar where you can electronically enter the bill due dates as well. Slide 26, please. Make sure we're on the same page. Yes, the personalized budget sheet. This is where you have all the categories, and it's abbreviated here for purposes of the slide, but your handout has a lot more categories. Obviously, you want to write down your payee and whether it's a fixed or variable expense. Fixed means it's the same amount of money continually, such as, you know, rent or mortgage and other expenses. And variable means that the amount due changes. And this is where receipts are important, especially if just using a hypothetical example from class the other night, where there were students who have variable income. You know, it fluctuates. And in one case, the lady is a waitress, so she takes the cash tips and puts it in the bank. And so I recommended keeping a track of what that cash she's putting in the bank is, so she can kind of get an idea of, on average, how much is she making, or, you know, what amount of tips she's making the most often, which would be called the moat, and just kind of getting a handle on it, even if it's a variable income or expense. Now, one of the reasons I like putting the identifying the fixed and variable is because I think it could become a useful tool for people who are on limited income. Let's say you have something like a magazine subscription or a dry cleaning bill. Those are variable expenses in the sense that when it comes due, it's not a hard due date. The dry cleaners folks who don't have your Social Security number are not going to report you to the credit bureau because your income is limited that month and you can't pay for it. So determining whether something is fixed or variable can become a very useful tool in terms of prioritizing which bills get attention and which are going to have to hold off until there are more resources coming in. There's the estimated amount, so you can pull this out before payday and put down, well, this is what I think is coming in and going out on average. And then there's the actual amount. When the bill actually comes in the mail, you can put the actual there. And there's the due date, whether it's due generally in the first half of the month or the second half of the month. And then the payment method, which we went into detail discussing earlier in this session, determining how exactly we're going to pay the bills. And you can take this and make copies of it and three-hole punch it, you and your clients for that matter, and put in a three-ring binder. And I recommend pulling it out before payday hits so that when payday hits, you know exactly, you know, what you're taking out or, you know, how you're paying for it and which bills are going to get paid and so on and so forth. And let's see here. Ray, do you want to go ahead with your third and final polling question?
Sure will. Ed, do you want to take care of that for me so you can read that one? Ed's not with us. We'll have to remember that, everybody. Ed took a break at an inappropriate moment. All right, I'm going to read the question before I share it with you. My consumers cannot save due to the resource limitations placed on them by public benefits programs. So if you will make it, did I open the wrong one again?
Actually, that's the question.
That is the question.
In front of me. That is the question.
All right, great.
It's a true or false.
Yeah, so if you would pick true or false.
Actually, I think that was the incorrect one was posted, Ray. Let me hide this and share. As Ray says, my consumers cannot save due to resource limitations placed on them by public benefits programs. True or false?
Thank you, Jeff, for rescuing me.
You're welcome.
That's what I told everybody. Jeff is here to rescue.
We're going to have to slap Ray's wrist.
Exactly. I thought he was
Ed's
to
wrist,
rescue
I mean,
everybody else.
Ed's wrist. Well, Ed's wrist. Exactly. He disappeared.
So what's wrong with my wrist now?
Nothing. You'll get slapped later on.
Good. You know me. I like it.
Yeah. All right, so we've got 69%. Come on, it's a true or false question. What do you think about this, guys?
And there's a split, by the way.
There is a split, an interesting split. And this is almost kind of a preview of things to come. Remember, this is a series that's building upon itself. All right, so if we can close that down.
I'll do that for you, buddy.
Okay, and show everybody the results.
There's the results.
18%.
That's right. 18% say true.
Yep, that there are limits placed upon our clients so that they cannot save. 82% said that was false. So, Michelle, what do you think? Are you going to go with the audience on this one?
I'm going to go with the audience. The correct answer is B. We often think of savings in terms of revenue generation. But we also don't really look at savings on the consumption side, like in terms of reducing our consumption so that we can have more resources available for the things that we need to apply the money toward. And this is a perfect segue into next week's session, which will be session 3 of this series, next Wednesday, October 20th, 10 a.m. We will go over the various ways that we can save money on a daily basis and reduce our consumption.
All right, thank you. And, you know, I'm going to give another plug to Elizabeth when we talk about our fourth session as well, which is going to talk about some of the tools that our clients can use to amass wealth. And that's what it's all about here, guys. Although wealth is a relative term, and I'm truly
especially
of the
if you're on SSI.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and we're talking about, like I said, wealth is a relative term, and it may not be easy because of our clients' severe restrictions financially, but it is possible, and we need to try to make that happen. As Mache said next week, you can start with, or we'll say next week, you can start with $5 a month. You know, it all adds up eventually. All right, so we can move on, Mache, and I'm just going to give you a about a 10-minute warning so we can get any other questions that the folks might have.
Okay. Well, that actually concludes the PowerPoint segment, but while the poll was being conducted, I did quickly look up my my other notes on it says here, don't forget the other pieces of the financial literacy picture in order to address the gentleman's question about, mm-hmm. you know, what other things should we be looking at financially. And again, I just want to caution that at least what I have written here might be termed, you know, a little bit more middle class, but some also applies to low-income populations. Let's start with the bail. We use that in the world of entrepreneurship, but BAIL is B-A-I-L. B stands for banker. A stands for accountant. I stands for insurance agent. And L stands for lawyer. But if I were to use that in, you know, the world of disabilities, banker, it's important for anyone, everyone, to have a quote-unquote relationship with their financial institution. I mean, it's just helpful to be able to walk into the door and, you know, they know you, and especially with people with disabilities, to know that there's an advocate there at the credit union or the bank who can sit down with them if there's a discrepancy. The others that I have here, again, I have to be mindful of the population, but I have here financial representative or advisor. Obviously, that's for those who have, you know, more means to be able to invest their money. Benefits administrator, that's for everybody. Mm-hmm. The many people on this call, I'm sure, are helping the clients to manage their benefits. And then again, the last three I see here are real estate broker, mortgage lender, I've already said insurance agent. Again, these are just people, resources, vendors, entities that are out there to help yep. everyone get their financial picture on solid yep. tracking and footing. And the last thing I'll say there, Ray, mm-hmm. is relationships. I just think it's so important to go by referrals or, you know, tap into your social network to get people who are truly going to help you and have your best interest at heart. I'm just a little bit more in favor of that than cracking open the yellow pages and getting, you know, whomever. Mm-hmm. I just think that's very important to
yes.
to go with referral.
Yeah, Mache, I just wanted to mention my own personal experience with a financial advisor, if that's what you want to call it. And it does sound overly middle class, particularly when we're dealing with our consumers, but it's really not. I mean, I don't, my financial advisor is very much into the stocks and the bonds and you know, IRAs and all of that good stuff, but she is also a person who can help people budget. You know, the first question she had for me when I went to meet with her was, let's look at your checkbook. Is it balanced? How do you manage your money? So she was really into that. And I've been meeting with her for I bet you it's close to 25 years. And it was at the time where I started beginning, you know, as a legal services attorney, I started beginning to think about putting $1,000 a year away into an IRA because certainly, you know, legal services doesn't provide us with many pensions. So that type of person, when you look around your area, if that type of person's available, they may call themselves a financial advisor, but they may be something else completely. And the wonder of my person is she works on a sliding scale. So if an SSI client were to look for help, it would be based on annual, her fees are based on annual income.
And I'm so glad you said that. There are financial advisors out there who work, yes, on the sliding scale, and then there are some who do not charge. And, of course, when you're sitting down interviewing them, it is important to ask that question, you know, how exactly do you get compensated so that you can make the right choice. The other thing that I like about what you said, Ray, you know, it's the whole point of this seminar series. It's about asset accumulation and development. And, you know, that's where a financial representative or advisor, but the other people, the benefits administrator, can come in handy in terms of helping the client and consumer.
All right. And I'm looking at the question box, and we're getting close to the end of our time, but we're not really looking at a whole lot of questions. So I think people are pretty much on top of what we're talking about. I apologize for the rubber ducky squeaking. It was my beagles, and unfortunately, if they're playing with something, I'm a happy camper. so
well,
I will.
Great. I thought it was a robot or something.
Yeah.
Over Miche's brain.
Yeah, oh, no, it was my beagles, but they join in the webinars every once in a while. So what I'll do is thank Miche for giving us her information today and sharing with us the tools that our folks need. Encourage you all to take a look at her text information that was sent to you and just begin to have the conversation with your clients. And point them in the right direction. It may be pointing them to Target. It may be pointing them to the dollar store or pointing them to a used office furniture supply place. You know, I mean, I'm thinking about Building 19. I don't know if you have those around where you are, but it's a place that buys all of the, you know, equipment or stuff like that that has fallen off trucks or has been in a fire. So you might get a file cabinet with a dent in it, but it's half price. You know, so refer them to places like that where people can begin this journey to financial literacy, because I think it's clearly a very necessary thing as we enter into work and having more money come in. And Miche, we look forward to having you again next time. Thanks an awful lot.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, everyone.
Take care, folks.
Have a good day.